Imagine standing on the coast of Florida, just, watching a Falcon 9 rocket break the atmosphere.
Oh, yeah. It's quite a sight.
Right. And before the smoke is even cleared from the launch pad, I mean, before the telemetry data has even fully settled, another massive orbital rocket is already igniting its engines on the totally opposite side of the country in California.
Which is just wild.
It's insane. And the most shocking part, the thousands of micro decisions coordinating that dual coast launch weren't even written by a human.
Nope.
And that is not a hypothetical scenario, by the way.
Yeah.
That actually just happened. And you were here because, well, you want to understand the machinery behind these massive shifts without getting bogged down in the jargon. So, welcome. It is great to have you with us for this deep dive.
Yeah, glad you're here.
Today, we are looking at a single, incredibly detailed intelligence briefing. This is the Tech in Morning briefing, dated Sunday, August 16th, 2026.
And I gotta say, it is a phenomenal snapshot of where we are right now. Like the editorial board at Tekin dropped a quote in this briefing that it just perfectly frames our mission today. They wrote, "Those who control the silicon control the future."
Okay, let's unpack this because that is exactly what we are going to explore. We're looking at a single, frankly, exhilarating weekend of news. We're talking mega mergers, spaceflight records being totally shattered, and this invisible hardware crunch.
Right.
We want to see how this insatiable demand for AI compute power is just reshaping everything. I mean, we are talking about ripple effects moving from global geopolitics all the way down to the price of your next hard drive.
Yeah, because none of these events are happening in isolation. That's the key.
Right.
The software, the physical rockets, the international borders, the global supply chains, they are all interconnected components of the exact same rapidly accelerating loop.
Yeah. So let's start with the catalyst for that acceleration, which was the biggest corporate tremor of the weekend. In an all-stock transaction, SpaceX has officially finalized its acquisition of the AI coding startup Cursor.
Originally developed by Andy Sphere, yeah.
Exactly. And the price tag on this is a staggering $60 billion.
$60 billion. I mean, just for context on the mechanics of that deal, Cursor's equity has been converted into roughly 389.3 million shares of SpaceX Class A common stock.
Wow.
Yeah, structurally, they are not just acting as a vendor anymore. Cursor is being completely folded into a brand new dedicated division called SpaceX AI.
So they're all under one roof now.
Right. They are going to be working right alongside xAI and the Grok frontier models.
Okay, so I want to break down what this actually means for the technology because, this isn't just a tech giant buying a slightly better text editor for its engineers.
No, not at all.
Standard AI coding up to this point has been a bit like having an aggressive autocorrect for a Word document.
That's a good way to put it.
Right. But integrating Cursor into SpaceX's infrastructure is, well, it's like having an autocorrect that can read the structural engineering blueprints of your house and instantly tell you if adding a window is going to cause the whole roof to collapse.
What's fascinating here is that analogy gets right to the heart of the structural shift. We are moving away from AI code generation being the standalone tool.
Right, like a helpful little assistant on your laptop.
Exactly, indexing your local code. We're moving from that to it becoming a vertically integrated computational giant. The crucial mechanism here is hardware access.
Hardware access.
Yeah, Cursor's engineering teams now have direct access to one of the world's most expansive enterprise GPU supercomputing clusters.
Okay, wait, so it changes the fundamental capability of the software.
Oh, dramatically.
Yeah.
They aren't just processing a few lines of code at a time anymore. They can process massive, multi-million line software repositories almost instantaneously.
That's huge.
It is. It transforms Cursor from an IDE, an integrated development environment, into a full-scale autonomous engineering ecosystem. Like it can write, test, and deploy code at scale.
And the practical application of that is just wild. I mean, the briefing notes that analysts are projecting this integration is going to accelerate software iteration timelines for the Starship flight control systems by over 400%.
400%, yeah.
They are taking custom low-level systems programming variants of Grok and fine-tuning them specifically for aerospace, embedded avionics, and space flight telemetry. But I really want to pause on that 400% metric. How does a software cycle actually speed up that much in reality?
Well, it happens by removing the human bottleneck in the testing and simulation phases.
Okay.
Before a human engineer even reviews the logic, The AI has already written the test environments. It's run thousands of simulated physics parameters and optimized the C++ code for the rocket's telemetry.
So it's doing the heavy lifting before a person even sees it.
Exactly. The AI evaluates its own failures and rewrites the code in milliseconds.
Wow. So that perfectly bridges us to the real world, I think.
Okay.
Because software is virtual, right? It can iterate in milliseconds.
Yeah.
But rockets are intensely physical.
Very much so.
They take time to build, time to fuel, time to launch.
Mm-hmm.
How does a hyper-accelerated software cycle manifest in a physical steel tube sitting on a launch pad?
It manifests as logistical orchestration. You see, the bottleneck in spaceflight isn't always bending the metal. It's the thousands of system checks that have to happen perfectly in sequence, which brings us to the aerospace milestone from Saturday, August 15th.
Right. This is the dual-coast launch I mentioned at the start of the deep dive.
Uh-huh.
At 9.1 p.m. Eastern, a Falcon 9 lifts off from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station in Florida, carrying 8 global telecommunications satellites for Globalstar.
Right.
Then, just 38 minutes later, at 9:50 p.m. Eastern, a second Falcon 9 launches from Vandenberg Space Force Base out in California.
That's right.
And that one is deploying a classified USF-366 national security payload for the U.S. Space Force. Oh, and both first-stage boosters pulled off flawless precision landings on autonomous drone ships.
Which is just an incredible operational feat. I mean, they smashed their own previous record of a 65-minute turnaround, which they set back in August 2024.
Yeah, but I have to push back on this a little bit, though. Launching 38 minutes apart is a fantastic PR stunt, obviously, but is it actually necessary?
Oh.
I mean, why risk a dual-coast disaster, literally coordinating two massive explosive events simultaneously just to shave 27 minutes off a record that nobody else is even close to beating?
I get that. It absolutely looks like a stunt on the surface. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, it's actually a rigorous stress test for two entirely different operational realities.
Okay, what's the first one?
First, for deep space exploration, Starship requires high-frequency orbital refueling. You cannot send a massive payload to Mars without rapidly launching fuel tankers into Earth's orbit to fill it up before it leaves. So proving you can launch within 38 minutes proves that rapid orbital refueling is technically viable.
Oh, I see. And the second reality?
The tactical utility for the National Defense Apparatus.
Oh, right. The Space Force payload.
Exactly. If the U.S. Space Force needs to replace a downed satellite or insert a tactical payload into orbit immediately during a conflict, a 38-minute rapid response capability fundamentally changes global security dynamics.
Okay, that makes sense on a strategic level. But mechanically, how on earth do you coordinate that?
It's complicated.
I mean, you have two separate launch sites, 2,500 miles apart. You are loading concurrent cryogenic liquid oxygen and densified methane propellant. And for you listening who might not be deep into aerospace jargon, densified methane means they are chilling the fuel to extreme sub-zero temperatures, so it physically shrinks, which allows them to pack way more combustible energy into the exact same tank volume. But doing that simultaneously on two coasts, how do you run dual flight control teams without cross-channel telemetry interference or, you know, just human error causing a delay?
This is exactly where the cursor acquisition and that 400% software acceleration comes into play. You don't rely on human-in-the-loop approvals for every data point anymore.
Really?
Yeah. By utilizing AI to write highly optimized, fault-tolerant flight software, the rockets manage local network switching and automated fault tolerance autonomously.
So the rocket is kind of talking to itself.
Essentially, yes. The AI code acts as a local traffic cop on the rocket itself. It instantly filters out telemetry noise and executes those cryogenic loading sequences without needing a human in a control room to click proceed at every single step. It virtually eliminates network latency.
Wow. So SpaceX is building this impenetrable closed vertical ecosystem. They write the AI code. The AI code runs the automated fueling checks. The rockets launch the hardware. Everything is in-house in Texas or Florida.
Completely vertical.
But what happens when you can't build your own hardware ecosystem from scratch? Like, other global tech titans have to navigate actual international borders and incredibly strict data sovereignty regulations.
Oh, it creates a massive logistical puzzle. When you cross borders, you aren't just dealing with physics anymore, you are dealing with law.
Exactly. Look at Apple. According to the Tech and Briefing, Apple has over 250 million iPhone users in Greater China.
That's a huge market.
Massive. But to bring their Apple intelligence features to that market, they had to navigate Beijing's domestic AI sovereignty regulations. You can't just route all that data back to servers in California.
Right. The data has to stay local.
So They partnered with Alibaba Cloud to co-develop and train a customized proprietary model using Alibaba's Qwen Foundation architecture.
And that strategic partnership secured them provisional clearance from the Cyberspace Administration of China.
Yeah, and this actually leaked out because Apple briefly published a Chinese language Mac support document detailing how Siri and the macOS writing tools integrate with the Qwen model.
Right, someone caught that.
Yeah. So to visualize how this works mechanically for you listening,
yeah.
It is essentially like Apple is renting a heavily guarded, localized kitchen, which is Alibaba Cloud, but Apple is insisting on using their own chefs, the Apple Silicon Neural Engines, to evaluate all the ingredients locally on the device before anything actually gets cooked.
That is a highly accurate way to frame the security architecture, actually. Apple utilizes what they call private cloud compute protocols.
Okay, how does that work?
Well, the initial prompt evaluation, deciding what the user is asking and what sensitive data is involved, that happens entirely on the localized neural engine inside the user's physical iPhone.
So the data hasn't left the phone yet.
Exactly. Only the heavily anonymized compute requests are sent to the localized Alibaba Cloud nodes to handle the really heavy lifting.
Which means they stay fully compliant with local data laws without blowing up their own privacy standards.
Precisely. And impartially speaking, navigating these specific domestic regulations is simply the reality of doing business in that region. Apple has a 20% revenue exposure in the Chinese consumer market.
They can't just ignore it.
No, they had to find a compliance pathway that maintained their native iOS ecosystem. Plus, practically speaking, utilizing the Qwen architecture delivers a highly nuanced linguistic understanding of regional Mandarin dialects and cultural idioms that a Western-trained model would really struggle with.
Ah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a strategic necessity that neutralizes the commercial threat from domestic smartphone rivals like Huawei and Xiaomi.
So if Apple is building localized cloud nodes in China, and SpaceX is building massive GPU supercomputing clusters in Texas, it begs a massive question, where are the physical servers coming from? Because last time I checked, you cannot download hardware.
You cannot. And this is the silent crisis of the AI boom right now. Whether it is a proprietary language model or an autonomous flight controller, all of this AI requires an incomprehensible amount of physical memory. The global silicon supply chain is literally buckling under the pressure.
Let's look at the numbers from the semiconductor research firm TrendForce. NVIDIA is currently executing an incredibly aggressive production ramp-up for its next-generation Vera Rubin Enterprise AI computing platform.
The demand is just off the charts.
Right, and to build these massive enterprise systems, they're absorbing vast fabrication lines at Samsung, SK Hynix, and Micron. Specifically, they need ultra-dense TLC NAND flash memory.
Just to clarify the mechanics here for a second, TLC stands for triple-level cell.
Okay.
It is a manufacturing technique where you stack 3 bits of data into a single microscopic physical memory cell. It makes the memory incredibly dense, which is exactly what frontier AI models require for their operations.
Well, the briefing specifically mentions they need this memory for checkpointing and KV cache caching pipelines.
Mm-hmm.
Can you translate that into plain English? Like, why does an AI need so much dense memory?
Sure. Think of the KV cache or key value cache as the AI's short-term working memory.
Okay.
When you have a long conversation with an AI, or say, when Cursor is analyzing a massive repository of SpaceX code, it needs to remember the beginning of the context by the time it reaches the end.
Right. Otherwise, it forgets what it's doing.
Exactly. The KV cache pipeline physically stores those conversational tokens so the processor doesn't have to recalculate the entire history every single time it generates a new word. As AI models get larger, the physical space required to store that context expands exponentially.
And because of this enterprise procurement frenzy to build these massive memory banks, the spot market pricing for raw 512 gigabit TLC NAND flash wafers just surged 44%. It hit $21 per individual chip.
That is the highest cost baseline recorded in the industry in over 2 years.
And here's where it gets really interesting for you listening to this deep dive right now. This abstract enterprise bidding war happening between cloud hyperscalers is going to hit your wallet directly.
Oh, absolutely.
Hardware analysts are warning that this upstream price escalation at the fabrication level is going to translate to 10 to 25% retail price hikes for everyday consumer electronics. We are talking about higher price tags on PCIe 5.0 solid-state drives, high-end gaming laptops, and even next-generation consoles like the Nintendo Switch 2 and the PS5.
It is the brutal math of resource allocation.
Yeah.
The memory fabricators are looking at the global market, and they are prioritizing high-margin enterprise data center contracts. They are essentially bullying standard consumer storage allocations completely out of the manufacturing queue.
You just push them aside.
They know NVIDIA will pay top dollar so that consumer electronics market gets pushed to the back of the line, and the end user, you and me, absorbs the costs when they finally get there.
Wow. So we have autonomous code running massive systems, rockets launching with almost no turnaround time, geopolitical alliances designed to push AI across strict borders, and enterprise servers literally eating the global supply of hard drives. Mm. It feels like the infrastructure of the world is accelerating faster than we can monitor it. So how do we govern the fallout? Like, how do we mathematically secure and track the outputs of all this raw compute power?
That is the defining structural tension of this era, governing the high-end output while securing the physical endpoints. And the Tikin briefing highlights two simultaneous developments that illustrate this duality perfectly.
Let's start with the governance side then. Anthropic has just publicly detailed the mathematical architecture behind their quad text watermarking system. And this isn't just an internal initiative. It is actually mandated by Article 50 of the European Union AI Act.
Right. Compliance is mandatory there.
They have to prove when a machine writes something. But how do you watermark text? It's not a visible stamp on a photo.
No, it is a deeply elegant mathematical solution. When a large language model generates text, it is essentially predicting the next most logical word or token based on statistical probability.
Right. Guessing the next word.
Exactly. What Anthropic's watermarking does is embed subtle, mathematically calculated perturbations into that selection process. It slightly alters the statistical distribution of the token selections in a way that is entirely imperceptible to a human reader, but mathematically obvious to a machine.
And the brilliant part is that these mathematical markers survive even if you copy, paste, or lightly revise the text. Automated verifiers can run the math and still flag it as Claude processed content.
It's very robust.
Yeah, and on top of that, they're integrating C2PA provenance metadata. For those unfamiliar, C2PA is basically a digital shipping manifest hidden in the file that cryptographically proves exactly where the media originated and if it was altered by an AI.
It is a highly sophisticated approach to transparency. We are deploying advanced cryptography to ensure we know exactly what is machine generated at the highest echelons of cloud computing.
But, and this is where the contrast is just staggering to me, at the exact same time, Anthropic is deploying advanced token probability mathematics. FortiGuard Labs detects the rapid spread of a new modular Linux botnet called EVU1Bot.
Derived from leaked Mirai source code, yeah.
Yes. And it is not targeting supercomputers or heavily guarded enterprise servers. It is targeting edge routing devices and firewalls from everyday vendors like D-Link, Netgear, Alcatel, and Tenda.
The cheap $50 routers sitting on bookshelves in our living rooms and small business offices.
Exactly. The botnet is weaponizing compromised hardware, turning these routers into persistent SOCKF5 proxy relay nodes to launch distributed denial of service or DDoS assaults and credential brute forcing campaigns. So let's translate that for anyone who is a network admin. A SOCKF5 proxy relay node is essentially a digital money launderer for internet traffic, right?
That is an excellent way to picture it, actually. If a bad actor wants to launch a massive flood of traffic to take down a website, a DDoS attack, they don't want the authorities tracing that attack back to their own servers.
Of course not.
So they hijack thousands of vulnerable home routers, and they bounce their malicious traffic through your living room. To the victim, it looks like your router is the one attacking them.
So what does this all mean? The irony here is just profoundly concerning. We're utilizing advanced mathematical perturbations to secure high-end cloud outputs from Claude, while the cheap hardware sitting in our own homes is actively being weaponized to break the internet.
This raises an important question about where we focus our security efforts. Navigating this AI era requires us to hold two completely different standards simultaneously.
Yeah.
Yes, we absolutely need high-level cryptographic standards for content attribution in the cloud. But we cannot abandon basic cybersecurity hygiene at the physical edge.
The boring stuff.
The boring critical stuff. Like network administrators actually updating edge device firmware to patch known vulnerabilities. Or everyday users taking 5 minutes to revoke the default administrative passwords on their home routers.
Change it from admin to literally anything else.
Please. If the physical endpoint is compromised, the mathematical sophistication of the cloud model is completely irrelevant.
It's a chain. And it's only as strong as that dusty router blinking in the corner of your office.
That's the reality.
So to tie all of these narrative threads together for you, We just unpacked a single weekend in August 2026. In those 48 hours, a $60 billion software merger accelerated the code testing cycle for physical rockets, which facilitated a record-shattering 38-minute orbital launch turnaround.
An incredible weekend.
Truly. We saw global giants sharing AI architecture to navigate international borders securely, and we saw the insatiable demand for AI enterprise servers literally eating up the supply of consumer hard drives, driving up the cost of everyday technology.
We started by looking at how software is currently bottlenecked by the physical limitations of silicon. But if models like Cursor are autonomously writing optimized code for orbital rockets today, it leaves us with something much deeper to consider.
Oh, what's that?
How long will it be before these AI models begin looking at the physical constraints of our hardware and start designing their own optimal processor architectures?
Oh.
We might be fast approaching the moment where human engineers are entirely removed from the hardware design loop, fundamentally shifting the nature of progress itself. When the primary bottleneck is no longer human ingenuity, but literally the finite amount of sand we can turn into silicon memory chips on planet Earth.
Wow. We build the intelligence, and then the intelligence decides how to build its own brain. That is a massive paradigm shift.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope this unpacking of the Tech and Morning Briefing gives you some genuine clarity into how these complex systems are quietly operating right behind the headlines. Have a productive, high-energy week ahead, and keep asking those big questions. We'll catch you next time.